On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we discuss whether or not we're being trolled by Five Nights at Freddy creator Scott Cawthon, the new Hearthstone expansion, and a few newly released games like Mini DayZ, Hoggy 2, and some others. Stick with us.
I know a magical place we could go, so close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Touch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. Thanks a ton for downloading this week's episode. If this is the first you've heard of us, my name's Eli and with me is Jared. Between two of us, we have like 20 years of experience covering mobile games. And this podcast is actually more than just a podcast about iOS games. We're actually from the website toucharcade.com, if the title of the show was confusing. Which is really the best place to go for like iOS news and things like that, or I guess mobile gaming news, because Android and iOS are kind of so similar these days that we hear a lot of people read Touch Arcade that have Android phones, because you know, you just look up stuff on Google Play, like all the reviews and stuff are basically the same.
Yeah.
So the idea of this podcast is basically like just a recap of you know, what we kind of posted about and played over the week. So you know, if you missed anything or you don't read the site or whatever, it's a good way to catch up. We also stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/touch arcade, and we also have a really active Discord community at discord.gg/touch arcade, which you can join in on either of those. We are a primarily community supported these days, so if you appreciate what we do, like this podcast, like the site, have fun in the Discord, like watch us on Twitch or whatever else, you can go to patreon.com/touch arcade. Alternatively, if you do a lot of shopping on Amazon, we'd really appreciate it if you would do it through toucharcade.com/Amazon. When you click through our links, we get like pennies on the dollar or whatever you buy, which adds up over time, actually. Surprisingly.
Yay, pennies.
Surprisingly nice. Yeah. Or alternatively, just tell your friends about the show or whatever. Like, hey, I, you know, listening to these two guys ramble on about iPhone games allows me to stay up to date on all the cool stuff, you know, and all the other stuff. If you do back us on Patreon, however, you get a video version of the podcast. You can kind of see the games that we're playing as we're talking about them. And that's exclusive to Patreon people for 30 days. And you can watch older episodes if you want for free. But I guess we just ask if you do that and you enjoy them, you know, kick us a buck or something like that, because that's the point of that. And always, we always appreciate iTunes reviews of any kind. If you like the show, you know, drop us a note there or send us an email at podcast@touchrk.com with any questions or anything you'd like to hear us talk about or anything like that. So with that, I guess we can get the show on the road here.
How's that Let's sound? Do it. Let's hit the road.
All right. Well, I guess to start stuff off with a lot of news from the week. Kind of going in chronological order here. This is kind of a weird week because of the 4th of July. And I guess technically Monday was a work day, but it seemed like absolutely everyone had taken a 4-day weekend. So there was absolutely nothing going on at all.
Yeah.
With one exception, and that is Five Nights at Freddy's Scott Cawthon potentially trolling his audience. Maybe, maybe not. Not really sure on this one. So, Five Nights at Freddy's a super huge, it would be impossible for me to believe that very many people listening to the show hasn't heard of Five Nights at Freddy's, but kind of like a jump scare sort of game that takes place in like a kind of Chuck E. Cheese thing that's haunted, I guess, or the robots are evil or something along those lines. So there's five games now in the series, and the sixth is allegedly on the way. And so far, it's just titled Five Nights at Freddy's 6 is what the community is calling it. So people kind of expected the game to come out sometime reasonably soonish. And its developer, Scott Cawthon, who's a one-man dude, I think, who might contract people out for art or sound or whatever, but just one guy, like posted this weird kind of rambly thing on... the Steam kind of Five Nights at Freddy community about how he decided to pull the plug because the pressure that comes with like trying to develop another game in the series is just too much. And it's kind of, you know, taking away from other aspects of his life. So he's kind of stepping back and focusing on smaller side projects would still sort of exist in the Five Nights at Freddy's universe. So, I mean, there's two ways to look at this, right? So one is that, all right, that's a totally reasonable thing to say. Because, like, how do you continue making Five Nights at Freddy's games feel like anything more than just, like, all right, this is another
more
one of these.
Of the same. You know, more of the same. Yeah.
I mean, like, you can only do jump scares so many times.
Yeah.
And expand on the Five Nights at Freddy's universe so much before it just gets kind of silly. I mean, because the game didn't really have much story to begin with, right? And they've kind of tried to flesh that out, but
it almost feels like the community has fleshed it out more than he himself has. Yeah. You know, like all these theories come up over every little character or every little item or whatever. So
it's definitely kind of an interesting problem because like I can totally see where this guy's coming from, right? Where
mm-hmm.
it's like, dude, there's just so much pressure and like people expect so much out of all these games, right? That like, I don't know if this was, I mean, it's his baby, right? So
yeah,
you got to kind of figure like that, the amount of stress that puts on you is just unbelievable compared to like, all right, well, I'm just going to, you know, release fun little side games that, you know, maybe play as, you know, Freddy himself or whatever else mm-hmm. that, you know, exists in the universe. And, you know, they also have like the movie deal cooking in there. I guess there's a VR game coming and stuff. So it's not like there's no Five Nights at Freddy stuff happening. It's just the sixth one might be in a little weird place right now.
I guess that's sort of what happens with everything, movies and books and things like that, where, you know, there's like one or two really popular ones and then all of a sudden they're cranking out more and more and more. And at one point you got to be like, okay, well, they ruined it. I'm over it now.
Yeah.
Sick of it.
Yeah. Well, so the other.
But it seems like the fans are actually really wanting this still.
Yeah. So. But the other side of the coin on this one is that Five Nights at Freddy's sister location kind of pulled a similar shenanigan with that, in that, like, remember it was like just a random update, just like this one on Steam, where it was like, you know, this game is too dark and too disturbing, I'm not going to release it because like it even scares me too much, right? And then 4 days later the game came out, you know, so like everyone covered that, the first story like, oh, the game's canceled, it's too scary, I can't even believe it. I hope one day they release it because it's just too scary for even the creator, how can we even play it?
See, that to me sounds like dumb marketing junk. This to me sounds like I'm literally burnt out and over it. But if that was the case, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to judge. I feel like that first one was easy to spot as like he was BSing. This one is a lot harder to tell because it's a really valid reason. It's totally understandable to be like, I'm over it. I can't finish this game. I'm just not motivated, whatever, creatively tapped out. But that's also like a perfect excuse if you were going to lie about something like that and try and throw everyone off. The problem with that is then where do you go from there? You've cried wolf too many times.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, the problem is the people that are into these games are like kids that will just continue to fall for it every single time. It just puts us in an awkward situation because Five Nights at Freddy's stuff is newsworthy. And it's like, all right, well, if the game really got canceled, like that's newsworthy.
Yeah, I tend to believe him this go around, and I think I wouldn't be surprised to see him try and make a different game in the meantime, and maybe return to this in a year or two or something like that. It might even have more impact by then, because he rapid fire made these games over the last couple of years. So I don't know, maybe some time off would be good. But then again, I mean, he could just bust out next week and be like, "Here's the game, it's done. Fooled you."
The other thing to consider is that. From what I can tell, Scott Cawthon is like a pretty kind of, I don't know, like a religious dude, probably lives a fairly modest life, you know, judging by, you know, stuff that I've read about him as a person and stuff. And it's not unreasonable to think that if you live kind of a, you know, conservative, modest lifestyle with the success of these games that he's seen, like especially like a movie deal and stuff like that, as well as the long tail of these games just continually getting downloaded. It's reasonable to think that like the dude just set, you know, like if you got enough millions of dollars in your bank that you realistically never really need to do anything other than, you know, screw around on side projects.
Yeah.
And you know what you're working on is stressing you out too much. Like, all right, don't do it. Like, you can afford to do that, right?
Yeah.
So I think that is a reasonable thing to suspect.
Yeah, it's tricky too. I mean, this is kind of all creative fields have this problem, but it's like you have this dream and you have these goals, and nobody really tells you how to prepare for achieving them, and right. then even going beyond your dreams and goals, and then what? And then you have, you know, expectations, and then you have, you can't fall back on money being an issue. You know, like you see so many times, like these promising games, and people are like, we don't have the money to finish it, we don't have the money to do whatever, or like whatever. When you know money's not a problem, it's like you start to run out of excuses if you can't, you know, produce stuff that people love again.
I mean, looking at his stuff before Five Nights at Freddy's, it really seems like that he was just, you know, like a hobbyist developer that, you know, was just making stuff that he wanted people to play and enjoy and stuff. And then Five Nights at Freddy's hit so big, and the rest of the series as well, that I don't know. I think it's totally plausible. This has just complicated his life to levels that is just making him uncomfortable, and he doesn't need it anymore.
We've been covering mobile long enough that we've pretty much have dealt personally with almost all the people that have become, like, you know, the overnight indie millionaires or whatever.
Yeah.
And they all, without exception, have had some weird issues, some worse than others, where it's like you fell off the map and you definitely had like a mental breakdown or something like that, couldn't handle everything. But then there's other things where it's just like, we can't create another hit, or we're, you know, we don't have any more ideas, or, you know, weird things like that, where you've solved the money problem, which is almost everyone's main drive. And then you don't know where to go from there. So, I don't know. I'm tending to believe what he's saying right now.
But I
guess wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't true.
If next week we're like, hey, guess what? Five Nights at Freddy's 6 came out. I also would not be surprised. So,
Me neither.
Yeah. In other news, man, I'm getting dirty ads on mine.
Great ads.
Yeah. Pocket Morty's got updated with online multiplayer and stuff to, I don't know if this is coincidental or if this does in fact coincide with the launch on the 30th of Rick and Morty season 3. But either way, Pocket Morty is a really good game. If you haven't played it, it's probably the best Pokemon-like, I think, on the App Store. That seems like a fair description.
I would give that title to the Teeny Titans, but...
Well, how about the best free-to-play Pokemon-like on the App Store?
I feel like this is the more strict, like, Pokemon-like, where I feel like Teeny Titans is Pokemon-ish, but not... This feels like they took a Pokemon game and just slapped Rick and Morty everywhere, and that's great.
Yeah, so this now has online multiplayer battling, so you can battle your Mortys against other people.
I need to check this out. I haven't been into this game in a while, so I'm not sure what I've missed. But
I played the shit out of it. Man, I played the new.
Yeah, same here. For the first couple weeks, that was all I was doing.
Yeah.
And with all these updates and stuff, I might even start over again. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I kind of capped out when it was new, because it was like, all right, well, I mean, because there wasn't really that much content.
You hit a point where there was like nothing else to do.
Yeah. And then it kind of fell off. So, new dimensions to explore, a bunch of new content. But I think the big thing is the online multiplayer. So, you know, if you're like us and you played Pocket Morty's when it came out, or you didn't play it at all, it's definitely worth a look again. Like, the amount of fan service in it is nuts. But at the same time, I feel like the kind of Pokemon mechanics in it are good enough that if you don't watch Rick and Morty or whatever, like, you can still appreciate the actual gameplay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the jokes might just go over your head.
Right. Yeah, well, actually, when this game did come out, I don't think I had been watching Rick and Morty yet. I got onto it relatively late, and so I don't think I did get a lot of the end jokes and stuff like that. So it'd probably be even more fun if I am going to replay it now that I've watched all the shows.
Yeah. So Rome Total War Alexander is coming to iPad this summer. If you missed the original Rome Total War, it's... the PC game that got ported to iPad, it's kind of like a strategy kind of game. The iPad version was received very well. You know, no one really had anything that they didn't like about it. And I think it was either launched at like $5 or $10 or whatever. This is a standalone expansion for that, which kind of rolls the clock back farther down to like Macedonia, all the way up to the Persian Empire and stuff. So that kind of like time period. A whole bunch of new units and other stuff along those lines. So it'll be a standalone thing for $5. Worth keeping your eye out for.
They released Barbarian Invasion, which was another expansion to the original game, also standalone style. So I think it'll just be similar to that, and I think they'll probably just keep going with expansions. I'm not sure how many there are.
I mean, as long as
there's a lot of potential, it's been well received, and I mean, $5 a pop, who cares?
Yeah. So this is kind of silly news, particularly because it was heavily embargoed and stuff. The Candy Crush TV show, I guess, is a thing. I don't know. I don't watch normal TV or
stuff like that.
But I guess Mario Lopez is the host of the Candy Crush game show. So they have thrown him into the Candy Crush game because, sure, why not?
Because we're on the worst timeline possible.
Yeah, I guess. This is kind of silly from like a behind-the-scenes perspective because the King people, or I guess their marketing people hit us up and like had us agree to all these embargo stuff for this like big news, and it's like, all right, yeah, fine, you know, whatever you want us to do, that's cool. And they're like, all right, cool. Well, now that you agreed to everything, here's the big news: Mario Lopez is going to be a Candy Crush.
There's like, oh,
all right, well, cool. thanks for heads up, guys. That's really neat.
That is big news. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's for people that like the show, or maybe big time Candy Crush people or big time Mario Lopez fans, this all might be a bigger deal than it seems to us. But to me, I couldn't care less.
Yeah, Mario Lopez to me is like just generic TV host man.
Yeah.
You know, like it seems like anytime there's a TV show that like is kind of boring or has like probably a low budget or whatever, and they're like, shit, who do you get to host it? I don't know. Mario Lopez isn't doing anything. Let's just grab him.
Mark Summers is busy.
Yeah. So let's see, big stuff happening in Hearthstone this week. So there's a event taking place right now called Ragnaros' Fire Festival, where it's just a tavern brawl that has Ragnaros in it. It's pretty fun. But for the duration of the tavern brawl, which goes through Sunday, so if you're listening to this and it's past Sunday, you missed this, quests in-game are rewarding double gold, which is a pretty good way to stock up on gold to buy cards, because that leads into the next story, which is Blizzard finally announced the next expansion to the game, which is called Knights of the Frozen Throne. Mm-hmm. Which the speculation and rumors and then eventual leaks were pretty spot on, it turned out to be. So this is based on World of Warcraft, you know, obviously their expansion Wrath of the Lich King. Introduces Death Knight hero cards into the game, along with kind of like a bunch of other you know, Lich King-y kind of stuff that goes along with you know, that expansion in World of Warcraft. So pretty cool. I hope we get a card to reveal, because that was pretty good traffic last time around. But either way, you know, if you're interested in Hearthstone, you probably already know about this. If not, you know, now is just as good of a time as any to get involved in the game, because as we discussed a few weeks ago on the podcast, they changed the way that card pack opening works. So you'll never get duplicate legendary cards, which is the highest rarity. And you'll only get as many cards in a pack as you can play in a deck. So, you know, there's no longer any packs to the open where it's just like five of the same junky card.
Well, that's part of the fun.
Yeah, I guess. So Minecraft Story Mode is getting a second season, which I'm pretty sure that we already knew, but now we get get a look at the trailer, which kind of seems to just sort of, you know, expand the universe, much like, you know, I guess all season twos of Telltale games do. Mm-hmm. So I guess with the Wither, Storm, Vanquish, Jesse, and the gang are superstars. You know, which I guess we were thinking is going to give this particular season a different feel, because before they were just absolute nobodies. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you know, like a scrappy The Goonies style plotline. So I don't know. The Minecraft universe doesn't really interest me too much, but I do think it's very interesting that they managed to create such a kind of compelling narrative adventure inside of a game that has absolutely no story to speak of.
Yeah.
Like that itself is pretty cool. So,
yeah,
I don't know. But I guess keep your eyes peeled for this. The first episode, I want to say, launches on July 11th. So,
and this is probably a glimpse at what's to come in the future. But this trailer was revealed exclusively through a YouTuber.
Yeah, that's happening with Brawl Stars stuff, which is super irritating. Yeah. It's like finding out about stuff after the fact, because like a video is being reposted everywhere and it's just like some squeal YouTuber kid just like going on about stuff, which is pretty hard.
I am not in that demographic of the YouTube phenomenon.
No, me neither. So if you're looking for a really, 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 really good game to play for free this weekend, or I guess this next week or however long this promotion lasts, the original Sorcery is free for the first time ever. So if you've never played Sorcery, I think the best way to describe it is a like game book on crystal meth.
Yeah, sure.
Right? It's like a choose your own adventure novel that you might remember from when you were a kid, but just everything is turned up to 11. Like there's an in-game map that you can, you know, move your dude around to different places and back and forth and pick up items, and there's actually like a battle system and magic.
It's really it plays out the imagination of you reading a game book is the way I look at it. It visualizes everything and it creates an actual game out of game books instead of just like reading and using your imagination, which there's nothing wrong with doing that, and that's still a totally valid thing to do. But it's neat to see, you know, we live in this digital medium world now where all these old game books, these print paper game books, are coming in and doing things like Sorcery has done, which kind of like set the bar really for future digital game books. So yeah, if you don't own this and you don't download it when it's free, there's something wrong with you.
I've heard people that are parents like going through these with kids, because you know they're a story book you can share and they're interactive enough that you can make decisions together. And like really, I having played through all three of them, like I really can't think of anything that is not that like kid appropriate.
Not
kids really young, and like, you know, violence is not something you're
into. It's like, like fighting violence.
Fantasy violence, like fighting, you know, monsters and things like that.
If you'd let them watch Lord of the Rings or something, then there's nothing here that'll
And really, I don't think that the reading level requirement of the game is too high. So if you got a kid that's, you know, capable of, you know, reading chapter books, like I think that they would be able to get through this reasonably easy.
Maybe highly recommend it, especially for free. Can't believe it's free.
So there was a Nintendo, man, I can't believe this anime ad we're getting on Touch.
How do we get rid of that? That just gets served to us through Google or something, right?
Yeah. So there was a Nintendo Treehouse thing this week, which, you know, if you don't follow how Nintendo does stuff, they have kind of totally cut out the middleman of the media and just do their own little video releases of everything there is to say, and they're highly produced and really well done and everything else like that. So as part of the most recent Splatoon 2 Treehouse thing that they did, they revealed Nintendo Switch Online, which is the companion smartphone app for you know, the Switch multiplayer stuff. So, and again, I see I'm been paying attention to that. Basically what's happening is kind of an odd solution in my opinion to online multiplayer stuff, in that Nintendo instead of having like a dashboard like Xbox Live and, you know, having all your voice chat go through that and, you know, a friend system on the device and stuff, like they're doing this weird kind of like halvesies split where the Switch has a dashboard and you know, stuff like that and a friends list on the device, but you really can't do anything other than just like you know, send invites basically. So the smartphone app, you know, apparently is going to flesh that out further. So like, if you want to play Splatoon 2 with friends, like you organize the matches through the app, and that's what handles all the voice chat and everything else, which seems like a unbelievably clunky solution, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. I'm super of two minds about this whole thing, because for one, I feel like, you know, the way game consoles and even PC have been doing online stuff for decades now, I feel like they've kind of established a good system that works and it's fine and everyone's happy. On the other side, I feel like Nintendo sort of created this console that's, you know, this hybrid home portable, whatever. And I think that's sort of been what's driven them towards this solution instead, is because it kind of makes sense. I mean, if you're out and about and you got your Switch in your backpack and you got your phone in your pocket, and you want to bust out some multiplayer and do the voice chat and do all that stuff, you've got everything you need already. It's not like you, oh, I forgot my headset or forgot my headphones to have a mic or, you know, whatever. Not that those things are like crazy and you, you know, can't carry headphones around with you or something, but that's the way it looks to me, is that they want people to be able to I don't know. We're on our smartphone so much anyway. So like, you know, if you're going to get invited to a game and you get an alert on your phone, like to me, that's way handier.
That's than, cool. Yeah.
I sign into Xbox, you know, at one point in a day and find out that 3 hours ago, someone tried to invite me to a game or something like that. And I know like Xbox and Sony have their own apps and you can do similar sort of things with that. But that's the way I sort of look at it is like, well, why not offload a lot of this stuff to the smartphone? And at least see how it goes. I still think they should maybe have something built into the system itself too, even if it's just like a little mic that, you know, the voice chat might not be the greatest, right. But, you know, it would get you through in a pinch or something like that. But I don't know. I'm interested to see how it goes. It sounds like they just are very, much like the Switch itself, they're really kind of just playing things by ear and rolling things out bit by bit and seeing how they go and then iterating or even changing their plans completely. I think that's how the Switch is going to be for the next like year or two. So it'll be interesting to see this. This is coming real soon. It's coming the 21st of July. So that's just what, 2 weeks or something. So yeah. I'm interested to check it out and I'll probably be getting Splatoon. So I'll be using the app and seeing what it does. And right now it's only going to work with Splatoon, but they've sort of indicated that this will be the all-encompassing app. So as more multiplayer games come out, I'm sure we'll get added to the app with different functionality and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm excited to see where it goes. It's neat that it's something different, but I just don't know if it'll be necessarily a better solution or maybe it ends up being a worse solution than what we have now.
Yeah, I don't know how it could possibly be better. I mean, because like, so imagine, you know, you want to play like a marathon session of Splatoon 2 and you need to have your phone and your Switch plugged in, right? So let's think about the things that you would need to do that. You need the Switch power cable going to the Switch. You need, you know, whatever weird cable you have plugging into the Switch for audio and then some kind of like mixer splitter that you plug your headphones into that then also goes to your phone, but the iPhone only has Lightning. So you need the audio dongle. And then if you want to charge your phone at the same time, you need like I have like a Lightning splitter thing, so you need that.
You just get an Android and you have none of these problems.
Well, but I mean, it just it seems like a unbelievably clunky solution to like, all right, I'm plugging my headphones into the Switch,
you know? It definitely is clunky. And yeah, I think maybe we'll get to a point too. I mean, the Switch has Bluetooth, our phones have Bluetooth. Like, I don't understand why all this stuff couldn't be accomplished with some sort of like Bluetooth headset either. But at least for right now, it's all, you know, pretty wacky and wired, and that hoary headset that Nintendo's been talking about.
That's what
about.
I'm talking about. That, like that. Yeah, that, I think it's the just, diagram of how you would set that up with an iPhone. And if you want to charge all your stuff, it's like you need an entire fanny pack worth of junk to just do voice chat.
It's like the diagram you get if you're trying to set up a Wi-Fi router in like a business office building or something.
It's just crazy. I mean, because like the whole point of the Switch to me is like, dude, just pulled out of your bag. You got everything you need. You're good to go.
That's why I wish like there was a fallback solution where it was like, okay, well, we have built-in voice chat and we have built-in matchmaking and or, you know, invites and things like that on the Switch itself. You know, you feel free to use that, but also, you know, we have this app that kind of pushes everything to the phone that you're probably paying more attention to when you're not using your Switch, you know?
I mean, see, to me, it seems like, all right, so what's even the point of using the Nintendo app compared to like, you know, being in a Splatoon Discord on your phone?
Really nothing. And you know? That's how a lot of people even like don't even use the built-in, you know, chat services in Sony and Microsoft either, and they're using Discord or something else or the TeamSpeak things or whatever. So I don't know. We'll see. It's a solution. I just don't know if it's the best solution, but
yeah.
For the amount of stuff that I do online and with voice chat and things like that, like I don't really care. I don't do a lot of that anyway.
Yeah,
so maybe Splatoon changes that and I become super hardcore and really want to chat all the time and not have to, you know, have headphones in my ears or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess somebody keep your eye on it. It's just very strange. So, so this is kind of an interesting story here. So Slytherin is having a huge sale, but there's also a crazy catch with this. So most of their games have been reduced to like 99 cents ish or so. However, they are not updating any of their games to be 64-bit. So basically, if you buy any of these games on sale, they 100% will not work when iOS 11 hits. So like, whether you decide that you're going to install the public beta right now, or you're going to wait until, you know, it becomes final sometime in September before the new iPhone launches, or you're going to buy any kind of new Apple hardware, like, these games flat out will not work. And what seems extra crazy to me is that, like, you know, at least as of this recording, there's no warning at any kind of any kind on the actual app descriptions or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so like if you're not following this whole thing, you know, with all the 64-bit app stuff happening, and you know, you're like, oh hey, you know, Battle Academy, that game looked awesome. Like, I, you know, I've been, you know, just waiting for a sale because I have so much on my iPad anyway. Like, I, you know, didn't really need to jump on full price because their games are kind of expensive. Yeah. So I'll grab
now. These games all do have that in their description. Very
do they now?
Yeah, right up top. Okay. So they all do say they won't work past iOS 11 or whatever, or they can't guarantee they'll work or something.
Yeah.
To that effect. So, I mean, there's a warning there, which I feel like is good. But I also feel like it shouldn't be on the developer to have to put that warning.
Yeah,
it should be an automatic thing that Apple has implemented so that people are aware, because like we've been talking about for weeks now, like, you know, the day's going to come where 80% or whatever people upgrade to iOS 11 in the first week or whatever their stat's going to be. And I guarantee not that many people know about this iOS 11 stuff with the 32-bit apps not working anymore. There was a pretty prominent developer, I forget who it was, I saw it on Twitter or the forums or something like that, that had no idea about it and was like, what are you talking about updating the app for 32-bit or 64-bit or whatever? You just had no idea that that was happening with iOS 11, even this, despite us talking about it all the time, despite being an involved developer in the community and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Chances your average person knowing about it are very, very slim.
I mean, Apple has really kind of notified developers now of this happening, though. I feel like you really got
developers should have known. You have to willfully ignore that information if you're a developer. I believe, because this has been a thing since 2015, and they've even been talking about it since before then, moving up to 64-bit. So you had to kind of assume that there was this sort of thing going to happen soon. But yeah, I still think Apple needs to implement something on their end. I think it's crazy that they're not, and I think there's going to be a huge shitstorm that if they end up doing nothing. Part of me also thinks that maybe what's happening is that there is like a compatibility mode that runs 32-bit apps in some sort of separate mode or something like that that'll ship with the actual release of iOS 11. It's not been part of any of the beta stuff that maybe nobody is aware of. I feel like that I could see them do. They did something similar with that with like Mac OS. So you could run like OS 9 apps for like years and years and years, but it was like in a very janky compatibility mode or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean, I could see them doing something along that line for maybe a year or two before fully cutting things off. But then again,
it's Apple, though. They could just be like, no, Apple, we don't care.
Yeah, they could just be like, we don't care. And I could see either scenario very easily. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens. But for the most part, there's been a lot of hubbub about any app that hasn't been updated that might possibly not work after September having a sale. People have been getting very mad because they feel like they're being dishonest, or they're trying to just milk the last few dollars out of people and without telling them that you know, this game might not work or whatever. I think there's something to it. I also don't think it's necessarily malicious on the developer's part, like Final Fantasy Tactics. I think that'll end up getting updated. It might not be right away in time for you know, whatever, but I think eventually it will be.
I mean, all right, so I guess here's my problem with this is, like, so if you click any of these links or, you know, whatever else, like, you know, you see the icon, the game name, the download button, the screenshots, you're like, and the price, you know, you're like, oh yeah, this is definitely what I want, let me download it. And like, you know, you gotta like really get in, like what feels like the fine print even to get to the point where you discover that that's the case.
Yeah. And think of how many times developers desperately try all caps, you know, exclamation marks everywhere, asterisks everywhere, whatever. They try to put super important information right at the top of the app description for people, and it never fails that nobody ever reads that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, kudos to them for at least trying to warn people or give them a heads up in the description or whatever, but nobody's probably reading that anyway. That, and the people that do read stuff like that probably already know about this. So yeah. I don't know. It's still
an odd situation that I'm sure will only get weirder as.
But if you're going to keep an iPad or something on an older iOS or whatever, and you don't have those games, like, it's a nice opportunity to get them all for cheap. And I know a lot of us are keeping old devices around and not upgrading just to keep them as legacy devices for these old games. So
yeah,
be a good time to pick those things up.
So next story I've got on my list is the hit Chinese MOBA Honor of Kings is going to get a global release this year. So if you haven't heard of this, that probably means you're not in China, which is understandable.
I haven't heard.
So it's like the biggest game ever in China. It's absurd how huge this game is. Like, it's got 50 million daily active users. They're saying it rakes in over $140 million a month. Jeez. In just like one region, right? And it's gotten so crazy that like the Chinese government themselves have even like forced this company to institute restrictions to keep people from playing it too much.
Oh, is this the game that has the time limit stuff
in
it? Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, man, I don't know what's going to happen when this comes to the United States, because there's like two ways to look at this. Like, all right, so, you know, not everything that does well in Asia does well in North America. Yeah. Like, that's been a universal rule of video games like forever, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, maybe if the appeal is universal enough, like, you know, and they get 25 million active users instead of the 50 in China, like, that is still an absolute smash hit of a mobile game.
Oh, totally.
So I don't know. We'll
yeah,
see.
You can never tell. I mean, it's not as simple as just, you know, checking off the boxes of some extra countries or anything like that.
Yeah,
like, you really got to localize things specifically for each country, and it's a lot of work, more work than most people understand. Yeah. And even then, a lot of times you can tailor it to a certain country as much as you want. It still might not do the sort of, you know, success that it gets in its home countries.
Yeah, so. I mean, I can't even begin to list the number of, you know, like very, very, very popular Asian games that, you know, those same studios have been like, all right, we're going to open an office to San Francisco and port these over and it's all going to be great.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they start with just a giant bucket of money and then that just runs out because no one cares because their games are super, super, super Asian, I guess. And, you know, the kind of,
they just they have a, there's a very different market of mobile gamers out there who love free to play games, don't mind ads, love grinding. You know what I mean? Like all these things that I feel like a lot of the more hardcore mobile gamers here in the U.S. despise.
Oh, yeah.
Are things that keep people in like those Eastern markets continually playing these mobile games and loving them and spending money on them. So
for sure. I
mean, yeah, it's very different.
It's a total cultural shift because it's like.
Yeah.
You know, I get games demoed all the time from, you know, random Asian PR people that, you know, show up at E3 or whatever and have a game they're thinking about bringing to North America. Mm-hmm. And they show it to me and it's like a 100% auto battle grind game.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, cool. Like, when do you play? It's like, you are playing right now. And it's like, well, no, I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm not even looking at the phone. Like, when do we play it?
Yeah. The plane is watching your progress bars go up.
Yeah. So let's see, this is kind of a bummer this week. Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition is delayed until next week, which I guess is better than being delayed more than that. But
yeah,
kind of waiting to see what was going to happen with this because we expected it to come out this week. So like we were all like really watching the App Store to post like when it was out, and then it got delayed.
Yeah, so, and I have basically a very lengthy review almost ready to go for it, just waiting on it showing up. So it's... it's weird too because Capcom was not aware. They apparently did something wrong, or there was a glitch or a problem with their submission report, and so the game is actually approved. It just wasn't showing up in the store, and so they had to like take it down and resubmit it, which is weird. But I also get the feeling their PR person didn't seem to think that it would make it out by Monday. He felt like that was probably too quick, but Apple's approval times have been like crazy lightning fast lately, like a day or two.
Especially for big stuff like this. Like, I'm sure that this will get feature treatment, you know? So.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if it does show up on Monday or miraculously over the weekend or something like that. But worst case scenario, I think by this time next week, we should be playing it.
Yeah. So that'll be cool. And last but not least, just kind of like a little PSA to anyone listening. So Twitch has a feature that you can auto-host people with your channel. So like the way that works is like if we aren't actively streaming, our channel is still active because we're kind of like rebroadcasting an existing stream that someone else is doing. So what I've been trying to do is kind of get together all the iOS developers or publishers or whoever else that, you know, are doing iOS stuff on Twitch and kind of like wrap them all together in one list that we can auto-host with the idea
of being... Cool.
Like there's not a ton of mobile stuff on Twitch, but like if you go to the Touch Arcade channel, you can probably see something being streamed. that pertains to mobile, because like discoverability on Twitch for mobile stuff, unless it's like Clash of Clans or Clash Royale or something else that actually shows up in the game list, is just like unbelievably terrible. So if you're an iOS developer, publisher, or you know someone that is streaming on Twitch or something like that, like, you know, hit us up. You can, you know, hit me up on Twitter at Hodap, or leave a comment on TetraCade, or send us an email or whatever else, and I'll add you to the list. So it'd be pretty cool to have TetraCade as like the hub of like, you know, oh, just go there and you can see someone streaming mobile stuff like 24 hours a day.
I agree.
I don't know if I'll ever get there, but you know, it's cool to think. So yeah, just, you know, hit us up. Even like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I exclusively stream iOS stuff either. It's like, if you do iOS stuff primarily on your channel and like also stream PC stuff or whatever, or when you're bored, like that's cool too. Like, it doesn't need to be iOS exclusive. We're just trying to, you know, round everything up, because you know, Twitch is very much into like League of Legends and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and stuff like that. And you know, it'd be nice to have a larger mobile presence there. So with that out of the way, that's basically all the big news stories that I had prepped to talk about. So I guess we can move into the cool games of the week. What do you want to talk about first?
Gosh, I don't know. Let's talk about, how about Drop Wizard? That's a sequel to a popular game.
I didn't really like this one. This is a Nitrome game.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really fit in with what I like about their games typically.
This is actually, it's a Nitrome published, developed by Neutronized, who made the first Drop Wizard and also made, what was the Yeti Ice game? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, it's same mechanics as the first game, basically, where it's very Bubble Bobble-esque, where instead of shooting bubbles, you're shooting stars into enemies, and those enemies can like rally into the other enemies, and everyone gets defeated and turns into, you know, fruit and gems that you need to collect for score purposes and things like that. But it's all single screen platform levels, so and you can kind of drop down the bottom and appear at the top again, so you can wrap around and things like that. But the mechanics are basically that your little wizard auto walks. And so the first game, you would just control, you know, what direction he was walking in. And then when he drops off a platform, he shoots the star that will, you know, stun the enemies or whatever.
When he lands is when he shoots.
When you land from one platform to the other. So it's very puzzle-like in that you have to figure out the right time to drop or the right platform to drop on, wait for an enemy to pass before you drop down and shoot your star or whatever. So those puzzle elements are pretty cool. But then there's also some sort of action-y, platformy stuff where you have to, you know, determine when and where you're walking and when you're dropping down and things like that. And again, it's super, very similar to Bubble Bobble in the way that, you know, just the whole overall concept of the game. But that said, so this is the sequel. It's all new levels, and it's also in portrait mode. And as much of a portrait fan as I am, I actually think I liked it better in a landscape. I feel like it was easier to control because, I don't know. It's not that this is hard to control or anything like that. You get big separate left and right buttons, so you can decide which way you want to walk or whatever. But it just felt more natural, I guess, in landscape to me. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't got too far into it yet, so I can't say for certain like how much is new over the first game. To me, so far, it feels very, very similar. And if you like the first game, that's not a bad thing. There's lots of new levels and, you know, always the great graphics and stuff that Neutronized and Nitrome do. So, yeah, I don't know. It hasn't, I'm falling in love with it, I think.
I just feel like, the core mechanic, I feel like, is not really clicking with me.
I'd rather just play an actual platformer, to be honest.
Yeah, no, like, I'm kind of the same way.
I hate the waiting game of like, when do I walk and when do I drop and when do I, you know, whatever. So I don't, this one is like a puzzle platformer where the majority is puzzle. And, you know, it's like 70-30 puzzle to platform, whereas I prefer more platforming with lighter puzzle stuff. So
I also thought that the ads in this are a little aggressive for my taste. Yeah,
I just noticed that while you were playing that. I think it's every time you die or something like that.
But. Well, not only that, it shows an ad like very quickly when you first launch the game.
Yeah, that's like, always bad.
Because like, I downloaded it, played whatever like basic tutorial the game had, and then died, and then just instantly got like one of these video ads.
Yeah.
Less than a minute of playing, which, if it's not a publisher or developer I know, like usually that's kind of my peace out point.
Yeah, same here.
Because if it's like, all right, well, I haven't even like started playing this game and you're already showing me ads, like I'm out.
Yeah, and that's tricky too, because a lot of people try to like backload that sort of stuff, so like they won't show an ad for the first world of levels or something like that, and then when you start getting into world two, it's like you've obviously learned the game and are invested enough in it that they'll start showing you ads. But I feel like that can backfire too, because if you love world one, the ad free world one, and then you start getting shown ads when you've already been playing the game for a while, that can be annoying too. So you can remove them though. That's
$4 removes the ads, which is cool, but like I just feel like the amount of ads that is being thrown my way, we've kind of mentioned this with games before, like I haven't really hit a point where I'm like, I really like this game, I'm going to spend $4 on it. Instead, it's kind of like the ads are annoying me to the point that I'm just going to play something else.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like not really how Nitrum stuff usually is, which is a little strange.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely don't think this is a bad game or anything like that. I just think it's not really my type of game.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So that is Drop Wizard Tower, which, I mean, it's free, so I guess give it a look if you're into free games.
Yeah, we're checking out for sure.
So something that's like just absolutely rocketing up the charts is this mini DayZ game, which
I didn't try this one out. I didn't play DayZ on the computer either.
So. Well, so I the reason I built my current computer is for DayZ.
Really?
Like DayZ was the tipping point where I was like, all right, I need to buy a PC. I got to get in on this.
And how much have you played it in the last year?
DayZ, I played it maybe twice. Totally. Because the game's terrible. So, like it's unbelievably jank to the point that it's like not even fun.
So why does everyone love it so much?
Because it's super hardcore. And like on paper, I see why it's good, but I just never enjoyed playing it. Uh-huh. I never really got to the point where I was doing anything other than just like dying constantly.
Yeah.
So the basis of Mini DayZ is very similar to that of DayZ proper in that it's kind of like a survival sort of zombie game, where you're wandering around looking for stuff both to survive as well as craft into other things to make your survival easier.
It is really mini.
Yeah.
Tiny little dude.
So
I kind of like that.
The cool thing about this game is that like they have definitely done a very good job at making a mobile version of DayZ, right? This makes probably the most sense that a DayZ mobile kind of game could possibly make, and it's totally free. I don't think there's any in-app purchase or anything. Like the ads are very 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 minor. So there's no reason not to check it out. It's just like, I just think that there's better survival crafting games on the App Store now. Kind of the problem. And all right, this does have the theme and stuff of DayZ, and that, you're kind of like a ruined world and there's zombies to avoid and things like that. Like, and the whole eating mechanic and water mechanic and stuff like that definitely is a thing. But, it's just not that fun, I don't think. And maybe that's, the same problem that I had with the PC game is, what I'm having with this one. But like, I genuinely enjoyed the Don't Starve games, which I feel like on paper are very similar to what you're doing in this. I guess, more base building or whatever, but, it's just, I don't know.
Not clicking with you.
Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, that's okay. Some games are like that.
It's I don't know, like I feel like this is a game that I should like, which is kind of why I've been like trying to play so much of it, but it's just like I don't know, I'm just really not digging it.
It's weird in the world of mobile when there's so many games every week and so many good ones really, that I'll catch myself playing a game that I'm not enjoying, where I feel like I'm just playing it to beat it or do whatever. and I'm like, I'm not actually having fun. This isn't even really my type of game. There's no reason to do that. I mean, it's not like when you're a kid and you might have bought like two or three games a year because you had to save up your lunch money or whatever. And if you bought a stinker, you were going to stick it out. We have way too much options of great games nowadays that I don't feel the need to like force myself to play through games anymore. But yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty opposite of you. I actually on paper wanted to love the Don't Starve games and then tried them. I deleted and downloaded them probably like six or seven times over the years. And I've always tried to give it another shot and never, ever have gotten into it. So I don't know. I don't know if that means I would like this or not.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's certainly worth a try, you know, because this is not like some, you know, super, you know, when I first saw this pop up on App Shop or whatever, I was like, all right, well, this is going to be one of those like, let's steal the screenshots and the logo and, you know, upload a game that is, you know, some broken piece of shit. But no, like this is the real deal. And that in itself seems like it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how you kind of end up feeling about it at the end of the day. Let's see if I can kill this zombie guy I'm fighting. The combat's automatic in this, which is a little clunky. Like you just kind of stand next to a zombie you want to kill. I don't know. Like the other thing that was super appealing to me about DayZ was like the whole online component. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, not only are you surviving in the zombie world online and you're dealing with, you know, food and water and your overall sanity or temperature or whatever the last gauge is, you also are dealing with, you know, players that can either team up with you or, you know, just snipe you from a million miles away and you're just dead before you even know what happened.
And they loot you.
So that kind of like permadeath thing in a PvP sense was always really cool to me. But this game is local only. So it's really just you running around, running from zombies, which,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know, is kind of cool, I guess, but not like, I don't know. It's not my cup of tea, I guess, but it's totally free. So I would at least give it a download, check it out and,
to crack the top 20 free overall.
I think it was like number 2 iPad or whatever when I downloaded it. So I don't know, worth a look. What do you want to talk about next?
We can talk about this Star Vikings. Okay, it's pretty cool little game.
Did you? So what did you like about this game? Because I felt like it was like really just okay.
I initially, this was a Steam game that made its way over to mobile. I want to say it launched last fall on Steam or something like that. And so all I knew of it was like the video and the screenshots and stuff like that. And every indication was sort of that I thought it was like a Plants vs. Zombies sort of game. Cause you could see there, it's like all lane based and stuff like that. And you know, enemies coming from the right and you're on the left or whatever. So I sort of thought it was just like a silly, Vikings and space take on like a Plants vs. Zombies kind of game. And in fact is not quite that at all. It's actually semi turn-based.
It's like a weird turn-based strategy game. Yeah. Turn-based lane, turn-based strategy game. Where you only can move one direction kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that, I think to answer your question, what I like about it is that I like that it's almost like a puzzle game. It's not really like a, it's not like an action game or anything like that, although there's a couple of action-y sort of elements. But I like the different Vikings that you use and how they have different powers and how you have to think about how to use each one's powers the right way to like make it past each level. I mean, I would call this a straight-up puzzle game all the way, more than anything else. Yeah. So as you start to unlock different Vikings that have different, you know, abilities and stuff like that, you really have to like look at the board, each level you're given, and like try and figure out, you know, whose special abilities you'll be needing to use, or, you know, what your health is at, if you can absorb a couple attacks that you might need to take in and in order to, you know, move past a certain set of enemies, or even early on, like the enemies themselves, the way that they attack and are able to attack each other plays into how you beat some of the levels too, where it's like you got to attack this enemy so that he attacks everyone around him and kills the enemies that he's surrounded by. And if you don't do things like that, you might not have enough health to like make it through just like, you know, trying to brute force your way with your melee attack or whatever. So that's what I think is really cool. This is more than anything just a puzzle game to me. And I actually think it's quite fun. It's got a pretty silly sense of humor, which I don't know. From what I've read on Steam, is pretty hit or miss if people are liking the sense of humor or not. I have liked it so far. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty cool little game. I'm not super far into it yet, but I'm like excited to play more of this one.
I think it's $3 or $4 or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's not too expensive, I don't believe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty good. Cool. I guess it just wasn't what I was expecting to an extent that I'm just like, I don't know if I like this because I thought it was going to be something so different that.
Yeah. What did you think it was going to be like?
I don't even know. Like
just not this.
not this. Like I thought it was either going to be like way more Plants vs. Zombie like or way more kind of like Advance Wars like.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's neither of those. And I would say if you're expecting that, you might end up being disappointed. But I would say if you like puzzle games, that you're going to like this a lot because there's a lot of puzzliness about it.
Yeah, for sure.
And Vikings. So.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Check out Star Vikings Forever.
That is from one of the creators of Chroma Squad too.
Oh really?
As well as a few other games too. So there's some cool pedigree there too.
Yeah, I guess if you need something to push you over the edge, just go look at the Steam reviews because I'm sure there'll be a ton of people that have already hashed out everything there is.
Varying opinions, but yeah.
about the game. So, yeah, that's Star Vikings Forever. Hoggy 2 came out this week, too.
This is probably my favorite game of the week.
It's really good. It reminds me of if you took, like, Super Mario 2 and made an entire game of nothing but these kind of like jar puzzles.
Yeah. It is all jar puzzles.
So, you know, you play these little, I don't know, what are these guys, like slugs or something like that?
They're little hoggies. I don't know.
But, like, so the game is gated based on, like, the number of keys you need to collect in order to move on. And, like, to collect keys, you have to solve these little individual, like, single-screen puzzles inside of a jar. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, I guess, in a roundabout way somehow. But most of them involve like smashing enemies, avoiding enemies.
I think the other thing that makes this game interesting is that it's not your traditional run and jump platformer. You can only flip gravity or, you know, flip yourself, onto the floor or onto the ceiling or whatever. You can't touch enemies or anything like that. I mean, you can grab power-ups that allow you to kill enemies, but it's not like you can just jump into them and kill them or anything like that.
You also don't always want to kill enemies, too.
No, yeah, exactly. Sometimes you don't want to. It's very, very similar to the first Hoggy, which was like a really big success on mobile because it came out, 08 or 09. Yeah, so it was like one of the very first platformers, and I think like the cute graphics and sort of the Super Mario 2 look to it made it get a lot of downloads back in the day. But it also fit really well on the platform. The first game is tilt only. And so you would tilt your character back and forth and then you'd tap the screen to switch gravity. And that just seemed to work really well in a time when people hadn't really figured out what they want to do with virtual buttons and things like that. And so funny story about Hoggy 2 is that it is an entirely virtual button game. And people are complaining that there's not tilt controls anymore.
Really?
And so they're posting on our forums. And the guy who made this game, which if you did not know, is the guy from Raptisoft, who also made Solomon's Keep and Solomon's Boneyard and all those great games, Robot Wants Kitty. He was like, I thought I would get the Developer of the Year award for taking out the tilt controls. I had so many complaints about them back in the day or whatever. And so I finally put these virtual buttons in and didn't even think about tilt. And since it's released on mobile, he's had a million people hit him up about tilt controls. So I don't know if people just accepted it finally in the first game and now that's what they're used to or what. But he was just like completely surprised by that. And I thought that was
kind of... Yeah, that's so weird because I thought the tilt controls were, I mean, this is so superior. It's just silly. Right. So I don't know, but...
He's adding tilt controls as an option in the next update, and he's also adding the D-pad right now is sort of this left-right slider, and he's going to add just left-right separate buttons, which I think will be a nice addition too, because sometimes the slider gets a little weird. But yeah, overall, I just love this game. Very another very puzzly but probably more platform than puzzle, but lots of fun stuff to figure out in these games.
It's cool seeing a game like this that's so old kind of like come back too.
Yeah.
You know, because Raptisoft is about as old as it gets when it comes to an iOS developer, right? So it's neat to see them still making stuff.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, for those who have been following along for the last few years, like there was all sorts of Solomon's Keep stuff in the works, a remake and a new game and all this stuff. And this is just basically one guy that's been making, even before mobile, he's been making PC games as an indie for over a decade, I believe. So he ran into a lot of weird legal trouble. Somebody wanted to mess with him about the Solomon name or something along those lines. That really, ultimately, he came out in the end victorious, but it tied him up for several years, and I'm sure it wasn't cheap. And so it kind of like put everything he was doing on hold. And it really sucked because so many people were so excited for the new Hoggy and for new Solomon Keep stuff. And it's all been kind of just in a holding pattern for years now. And he finally got going again, got past all that stuff, finished up Hoggy 2, and it actually released on PC, I want to say in like January or December or something. And now that this is on mobile, his plan is to update his entire back catalog on mobile for iOS 11. So that's nice. We're not going to lose those old games that we love. And then continue work on Solomon Keep Remake, which is what his main focus is now. That'll be PC and mobile. And we posted about that before. You can look up some stuff. It looks badass. So anyway, just the fact that this guy's back in the mix and released a new game is like amazing to me.
Yeah, that's cool. So I guess, yeah, I mean, I got nothing but good things to say about Hoggy too. Like it's
yeah,
really, really fun. So I think we probably have time to talk about like one more.
The only other game I played, well, I played In Dark and I played Kraken Island.
Right,
and
which one? Or we could do quick hits of both.
Okay, let's quick hit it. Because Kraken Island is like, I wanted to talk about it mostly because, so it's a 3D platformer. It seems kind of geared after 3D Mario Land or whatever. And it's sort of the exact type of game that I feel like Suzy Cube is being made to prove that it can be done better than this. Because on the surface, everything about this game is really cool. Like, I love the graphics. I like the little Kraken, you know, character. Everything's all colorful and nice. The level designs are super good, too. But the feel of this game is just way off to me. Like, it does not feel fun to play. It feels like a chore. Everything's really slippery. It doesn't feel like you have real weight when you're jumping and things like that. And you're landing on enemies' heads. And it's really hard to tell, you know, gauge where they're at and things like that. Just all these sort of normal problems that 3D platformers have. And I feel like Suzy Cube, which if you don't know what we're talking about, you can look it up on our site or whatever, is a 3D platformer that's got the most love and care I've ever seen put into a game in my life. Trying to make something that solves all of these problems and thinks about these things behind the scenes to make the experience the best it can be for the player without the player having to worry about anything. And so this game is sort of like, yeah, it's a fun 3D platformer, but it's also a lot of like, you have to micromanage yourself to make sure you don't run off the side or jump weird, or to make sure you can collect that coin that you can't tell quite where it's at, or whatever. So like, yeah, it's hard. I wouldn't say I don't recommend this game or anything like that. And especially cause it's free. Why not check it out? And it's really a cute game, but I just don't have fun playing it. And there's another game called, Dragon World 3D or Dragon something 3D, which is like a lot of people tout as like the best 3D platformer or whatever. And that's another game where I've downloaded and deleted it multiple times trying to enjoy it, and I just can't because it doesn't feel right.
Sounds like this is your mini DayZ.
This is maybe my mini DayZ this week. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a firm believer of there being like a secret sauce in certain games where they just nail something that it's almost hard to explain what it is, but they just nail something that makes the game feel good to play. It's just fun to run around and do just the act of playing itself is fun. And then they build a really good, cool, well-designed game on top of that once those base mechanics are down. This almost just feels like they built all these great levels and they designed these rad levels and they have these awesome graphics and stuff like that. But like the very core of the game hasn't been, you know, as honed in as it should be. And because of that, it just feels like a little jank. So I don't know. I would suggest checking this game out if you like 3D platformers. And it's really impressive the way it looks and stuff, but it's not doing it for me. And it just makes me want Suzy Cube even more.
So it's Kraken Land, not Kraken Island.
Kraken Land. Yeah. getting cracking, like a kraken, like the creature. But I don't know. You're doing pretty good. What's your take on this?
I do see what you mean about being like slippery and stuff.
Yeah, you're zipping right through, though.
I guess maybe I'm just a natural.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like it's unplayable or anything either. So I don't know. That's just maybe my pet peeve where I feel like, God, I got so many games I want to play. I feel like I would just be going through the motions playing through this one because it doesn't. It's not fun to me. So I would check it out, though, if I were you listening out there.
This does kind of seem like the Mario Lopez of Super Mario 3D Land, though.
Pretty good way to put it. Yeah.
So, all right, let's check out In Dark real quick.
In Dark is, did you play this at all?
Nope.
So this is, this came kind of out of nowhere. I'd never heard of it before. And showed up on our forums and everyone was like, oh my God, it's like Downworld, so cool. And so I was like, cool, I'll check it out. And it is very much like Downwell in structure and a little bit in visual style. It's not quite as stark as Downwell, but it's got like this sort of glitchy retro pixel art thing going on. And I actually really love the visuals and music and stuff like that. And then the goal of the game is that you are going downwards through these randomly generated levels, but you're not really like running and jumping around. Like Downwell's more or less a platformer, just the base mechanics of it. This is like a drag your floating character through breakable blocks and into enemies and stuff like that. And for whatever reason, that hasn't quite clicked with me yet. Although I feel like it should, because I believe you can play this entire game, you know, with, it's like a portrait one thumb type game.
Am I supposed to be doing something for it to play?
No, or? This is a super long,
unskippable intro,
cutscene tutorial intro, which is pretty annoying, but the tutorial itself is pretty quick, so I think you're about to start it. But anyway, so you drag sort of like I'm trying to think of a game where you drag a character like this, and there are some, but anyway, you just sort of drag your character through these levels, and then you can quickly swipe to like, you know, to like dash into enemies. You collect these different items that give you different abilities, and then every so often you get like one upgrade out of three, just kind of like Downwell does. And then every once in a while there's like a shop too, where you can buy certain things like Downwell, like you know, regen your health or buy an extra power up or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like I need to dig deeper into it to see if there is something here more than what I've seen so far. But I just felt like I was just getting kind of bored. Like, you're just dragging. It's not super hard to, like, avoid enemies. And I feel like what really makes Downwell work is the platforming and the gun booting stuff.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
That's what makes that game is running and jumping and then shooting and trying to keep your combo going and stuff like that. And this, to me, is just sort of, like, brute force through the level and try not to get hit and buy things along the way, which feels not as exciting to me. But I also admit that I could be totally missing something. So anyway, it seems like a really well-made game. And I really like the visuals and stuff like that. It's like a game I want to like more than I have so far. But I don't know. Well, I'll have to see if there's something I'm missing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, initially, it's not super clicking with me, but it does look very cool. So.
Yeah, and it's possible there's things I haven't got to yet that offer a lot more depth or, you know, whatever. But for me, like, this doesn't... It looks like Downwell, but it doesn't. It's not even in the same league.
Yeah. Huh. Well, cool.
That's, I don't know.
In Dark. Was pretty difficult for me to actually find on the App Store. So you might need to just look it up on Touch Arcade and download it that way.
Yeah.
So with that, I think that's our podcast episode this week. Thanks a ton for listening. If you made it all the way to the end, you're extra awesome. If you like what we do around here at Touch Arcade, you like this podcast, two great ways to support us are either by going to patreon.com/Touch Arcade or doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. That helps us way more than you would think. If you want to hang out with us during the week, we're both on Twitch at twitch.tv/Touch Arcade. And we have a super active Discord server at discord.gg/Touch Arcade with people playing and talking about iOS games all week long. We actually have a really active Brawl Stars channel, people playing together and stuff, which is really cool. So if you like the show, we'd appreciate it if you tell your friends about it, or leave us an iTunes review if you'd like. And of course, send us an email at podcast@toucharcade.com if you have any questions or suggestions of things we should talk about or anything else like that. Otherwise, thanks a ton for listening, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.